everybody. This is Lizzie and
this is Crystal.
And this is Passionate Spicy Sugar. And she just had to deal with her mom, so
yeah. Can't wait to move out.
So today we are going to talk about language and words and, you know, things you say and why it's important to be careful about how you word things. And, you know, things like that. So Crystal's not afraid, though. She was telling me before the show about how she's tweeting at Trump.
Yeah, I've been harassing him a little bit.
Would you like to share with our very small audience what you like to say to Trump?
Okay, hold on. You can keep talking. I'll let you know exactly. I want to get this verbatim.
So today we're going to kind of expand a little bit on what we talked about in the last episode, where we were talking about the Black Lives Matter movement and what's going on. One thing Crystal brought up is the comparison of how, like, the news says something. So, like, when, you know, you have Black people who are rioting and things like that, they call them thugs, right? And but when you have white people rioting and, like, burning couches and shit, you know, they're just, you know, white kids, you know, throwing a fit about their
enthusiastic
team.
Enthusiastic.
Yeah.
Passionate.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to get into that. But before we get into that, I want to talk about this awesome, like, amazing man. His name is Raul Duby in D.C., and he sheltered, now the numbers vary. In some posts it says 50 protesters, in some it says 70, in some it says up to 100. So let's just say he sheltered 50 plus protesters in D.C. who were out protesting, and they got kettled into the Swan Street neighborhood where he lived. And kettling, I was explaining to Crystal earlier, is basically where officers will slowly close in and, like, trap protesters in hopes of aggravating them, and rather than de-escalating situations, which is what they should be doing, they do this to escalate situations, to arrest protesters, basically. Now, what they did is they kettled all these kids into this Swan Street neighborhood, not just kids, but kids, young adults, and, you know, other protesters, into this Swan Street neighborhood. And what does Raul Duby do, along with some of his neighbors, I believe, too, is they open up their fucking doors and let them in to their house. And, you know, they get as many in, like, Raul got as many protesters in as he could, and he was directing them to different places in his house where they could take shelter. He had said there were some reports of, you know, different, you know, protesters, like, washing out each other's eyes because they had been tear gassed. And, you know, he let them in. And what do the officers do? The officers come to his door and tear gas his door. You know, trying to get them out of there. He talks to the officers through the door. There's a video of that online where he's talking to the officers and they're like, oh, we're just concerned about, you know, maybe if someone needs medical attention. He's like, no, if someone needs medical attention, we'll call 911.
He's like, no, we didn't call for you.
And, you know, he's in there. He's like, but they're hungry though. You know, if you could get us some food. They're hungry. And there is video of him getting pizza delivered. I guess some of his neighbors might have helped with that too. Get some pizza delivered for everyone that was in there, and got him some pizza and some food. And they stayed there till early in the morning from the start of curfew, actually from, you know, 20 minutes before curfew, I think it was, through the net early the next morning. And they got, you know, rides arranged for everybody to get him back home. But, you know, just pointing out, you know, highlighting an awesome citizen, you know, an awesome citizens, because it wasn't just him, it was his neighbors coming together too. An awesome neighborhood, I guess you could say, around Raul Duby and them taking care of protesters. I posted a lot on Twitter. I reposted a bunch of the Twitter stuff around that situation. So he's a fucking awesome guy. So thank you, Raul Doobie and the Swan Street community. What do you think of that story, Crystal?
I actually saw that on Twitter when it was going down. It was, bless that guy. It was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And you know, some people were, you know, posting, you know, even like quotes from the Bible saying, you know, when you needed shelter, you know, you let me in, or when I needed shelter, you let me in. You know, things like that. And so, you know, he opened his home and, you know, protected these protesters through the night, and he wasn't taking his eye off them, you know. Yeah. So
I found the tweets.
Yay.
So Donald Trump was talking about Drew Brees and how he said that, like, he felt that the knee was kind of disrespectful towards the American flag, and talked about how his grandfather and his father served in the military, blah, 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 all that good stuff. And Donald Trump was saying, like, he's a big fan of him, and he's, like, one of the greatest quarterbacks, and he's saying it's honoring our magnificent American flag. Old Glory is revered, cherished, and flown high. And I said, you say this, but didn't you avoid the draft 5 times? Man, shut your dumb ass up. And then, you know that one song from back when your favorite Martian was like a band, and yeah, and they used to make music?
Yeah.
You're a douchebag? You're a douchebag. And then, like, he tweeted something. He tweeted the part about, we should be standing straight, tall, ideally with the statue or hand on our heart. There are other things you can protest, but not our great American flag. No kneeling. And I said, I'll kneel if I want to, asshole. Tell me what to do.
Like, here's the thing, too. And we'll talk about this, too, a little bit before we talk about the language. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about the American flag, right? The American flag is a symbol, and it's been a symbol for revolutions and stuff like that for years. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you really have a right to sit there and say, don't kneel if that's how someone's protesting, if that's how someone is starting their revolution and starting to let you know, and or continuing a revolution to make you aware of an issue and things like that. That symbol of the American flag is for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to honor that flag in different ways. You know, some people stand with their hands on their hearts. Some people take their hats off. Some people cross their hands in front of their bodies. And some people, in order to have to call your attention to an issue, kneel in front of that flag. Quietly, mind you, quietly, subtly, kneel in front of that flag, put their head down. You know, oftentimes when you see these, you know, people kneeling, they're kneeling with their head down. They're not disrespecting the flag. They're sitting there on their knees showing you what that fucking symbol represents, and showing you that there is a part of our system that should be protecting a group of people, in this case, Black lives, and has been the case for a long time, since way before the kneeling protest started. Mm-hmm. And showing you that what our Constitution promises, what the symbol of our nation promises, is not being fulfilled for an entire community in this nation.
So yeah, it's like, also I want to go back to something. I don't know if you saw Trevor Noah's take on it about the social contract.
I saw something where Trevor Noah was talking about, you know, video cameras and stuff like that. But
you gotta watch that video about him talking about the reason why people are rioting and looting and stuff is because it's a social contract. The social contract says that if someone does something wrong, and somebody else is being wronged by, we can call another authority to come in and fix the situation. But when that authority is asserting unnecessary force on a group of people and they feel like they're not protected, then that social contract is broken. I think it goes the same way for like these athletes that are kneeling or during the national anthem. The social contract is broken. So why should they uphold their end by standing up, putting their hand over their heart, for a symbol that doesn't represent them?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. That's a great point. Is that you're right. Like, and that's, I do have to go watch that video because that sounds very interesting. But yeah, basically what the symbol represents doesn't represent an entire community. So why should they honor it? And you can say that, oh, people have lived and people have died for this country. There were Black troops that have lived and died and fought for this country time and time and time and fucking time again.
I have ancestors that served in the Civil War. I have ancestors that served in the First World War. My great grandfather served in World War II and Vietnam.
Yeah. And we're still fucking over Black lives. We're still fucking over those communities. They fought for us too.
Yep.
So why should they have to you know, hand over your heart? And ultimately too, we need to emphasize this too. The flag is a symbol. That's it. It doesn't represent, it shouldn't be the sole representation of our country. When you honor veterans, you should honor veterans. We could do that by making the VA a little bit better instead of sitting there and saying the flag honors veterans. Well, how do we honor them actually? You know? The flag is a symbol. That's all it is. It's a very important symbol. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah.
It's been with us and been, you know, reconstructed every time we've added a state, every time we've expanded. But we also need to understand the other half of that is every time we expanded, we were pushing Native Americans out of their land as well. So that symbol has and it is not currently a symbol that represents everyone in this nation as it should. Mm-hmm. So, you know. Kneeling in my book is probably
the
one of
the least offensive things.
Like the least offensive, exactly. The least offensive that thing that could be done. Especially when you look at the rules of the flag too, and this gets brought up too. When you look at the rules of the flag, you shouldn't be wearing the flag.
No.
Many people don't know how to actually fold and take care of their flags properly.
No.
I know this because in elementary school, at my elementary school, in Coldwater, Michigan, we actually, I think it was in fifth grade, I'm pretty sure it was, we actually had a responsibility to put up and take down the flag each morning, and we had to learn how to take care of that flag properly and fold it properly, and you can't let it touch the ground. You're not supposed to let the flag touch the ground. You're not supposed to hang it upside down. Like, there are all these rules, and there are a bunch of people in this country who sit there and they like, have, I don't know, masturbatory fantasies over the fucking American flag, and they don't take care of it properly.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
I thought you meant that literally. I was just like, what? Somebody eating their meat to an American flag? I'm like, that is a whole new level of patriotic that I didn't know existed.
No, but you know what I mean, right?
I was shocked and appalled for a second. But I get what you mean now. You don't mean that literally. You mean that, like, figuratively.
Figuratively. Like, they idolize the flag so much. Mm-hmm. And it's just, they don't even take care of it properly themselves.
No.
So, you know, I think the least offensive thing that people can do, especially for protests, is, like, kneel in front of the flag.
Or during the national anthem.
Yeah. And it's not like people haven't equated it to taking a knee to for fallen soldiers as well.
Right.
So, you know, it's actually pretty respectful too. So, and you know, when we're talking about, prostrating yourself or like bowing down real low in some cultures or, you know, begging for forgiveness, like, that is a sign of respect and, you know, apology and, you know, things like that. So kneeling, I feel, is actually very much more respectful than standing with your hand on your heart. So, you know, because you're putting yourself at a lower level to that symbol. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but it's a symbol that doesn't represent everybody.
Right.
And, you know, and it's that needs to change. So, part of representing everybody and speaking of this whole situation, we'll move into like the language part of it here too. Now, we had talked about, in reference to the protest and the rioting, how language such as thugs and, you know, what's some other language that's used? Thugs is probably the big one.
Thugs. Yeah, thugs is the main one.
You know, I think basically you have thugs is like what do you call it when a word is constantly used for like one thing to like attract people's attention to it? Forget what it's called, but and it's primarily used when, you know, you see black protesters or black rioters is like, oh, these thugs are like destroying our community and, you know, and stuff like that. But a white person does it and, you know, it's like, oh, they're just, you know, they're just rioting and mm-hmm. they just burned a couch. And like, it's very subdued mm-hmm. comparatively. And the reason why, like when the reason why language is important and more important than symbols, I would say, like the American flag, is that language and words that you use frame how a person or a group can be viewed. Think back to high school when you or someone you know would pass around rumors about different people. They were using words and language to frame how that person would be viewed in your mind. And so I think when it comes to referring to rioting and protesting, you know, during the Black Lives Matter movement, the media needs to be more self-aware of what they're saying and how they're framing a group of people by what they say. What I'm telling you is words are important, people. I know we have this culture nowadays where people sit there and say, oh, you know, they're just words. Don't let it hurt you. Like, don't let it, you know, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. But words can hurt you because they frame how you are viewed in certain people's eyes.
Right.
And words have meaning. We've assigned them meaning for a reason, so that we can better communicate to each other and, you know, there are and frame people in a certain way. And some of that language and some of those words come from a time in our history where we, you know, had slaves or mm-hmm. where we had internment camps for, you know, Asian Americans. You know, or, you know, from when we massacred Native Americans. And that is the language and the words that we need to let go of, because their meaning should no longer be relevant when we're talking about human beings and when we're trying to work towards a culture that is more accepting and not racist and, mm-hmm. You know, is trying to stop discrimination. So like, you know, using thugs when you're talking about black protesters and black rioters needs to stop by the media.
Right.
Because it's not relevant. It doesn't add anything. It just frames them in a bad way, which they should not be framed in.
I think that's what the media, well, especially like the conservative media is trying to perpetuate, that it's that they're black protesting when it's actually like the crowd is very diverse.
Yeah. I mean, even.
But the connotations are still there.
Yeah. Yeah. The connotations are still there. And it also is another way that overshadows why these people are angry. Because when you say, you know, oh, they're being thugs, it makes it easier for people to dismiss them and dismiss their message and dismiss their concerns and dismiss what they're protesting about. Don't you think? Like, that's because we've seen it in videos, too, of various Black lives that have been attacked by police and that have been, you know, killed by police is think of how the officer is framed versus how the person they're abusing and attacking and killing is being framed. You know, people will say, oh, the officer was just doing his job, which makes it easier to dismiss what the officer was doing.
Right.
And they'll say things like, well, he shouldn't have been being, you know, doing, you know, something illegal. He shouldn't, you know, he shouldn't be abusing substances. Or, you know, he shouldn't be doing this or he shouldn't be doing that. This would have never happened had he not done this, this, and this.
Right.
And so the way people are framed using words and language is very important. And by no means should we continue to say, oh, that officer was just doing his job. No, that officer was not doing his job. His job is, his or her job, is to serve and protect. That's their job. Serve and protect. And I don't mean serve the government. I mean serve the people. Serve and protect the people. That's their job. That's their entire motto for their job, is to serve and protect. And when an officer goes and starts beating someone and murdering someone because of their color of their skin, or, you know, as Crystal has been saying, it's not just, you know, the Black community, or it's not just, you know, minorities and stuff like that. We understand that too. It has happened in the case where a white kid was face down, not doing anything, and he got shot by cops.
Yeah.
During a traffic stop, I think it was.
I don't know about that one.
But I can't remember. I think it was during a traffic stop. I mean, that has happened. But
yeah, that has.
It happens predominantly more towards the Black community and minority communities as well. So
my gripe with that is that, like, a lot of people, particularly white people, who are mad about people protesting Black Lives Matter, they think, like, oh, well, you only care when it's Black lives, when it's Black people that die. Well, this person was shot or suffocated by the police, but you don't see anything about them. I was like, because you guys don't go out and you're not angry enough about it. We don't see you out there pitching a fit because this person died, because you don't care. It's not us that don't care. It's you guys that don't care, when the problem is obviously the police.
Yeah. And that's the thing, force
that they're using.
That's the thing too, is like when someone says Black Lives Matter, they don't mean only Black Lives Matter. They mean that Black lives have been largely ignored time and time again. And so, you know, they need to tell you that Black lives matter, because obviously there's some of you out there that don't fucking get it. They're not saying that all lives don't matter.
Right.
That's a duh, really. I mean, duh, all lives matter. But Black lives are the ones who are suffering and have suffered time and time again. And we need to emphasize that Black lives matter just as much as everybody else's.
Yeah.
So, you know, highlighting language. And I hate when people take and they twist that too.
I don't know
if
this is, yeah. I was about to use the wrong word. I don't think I was going to use the right word for that.
Yeah.
But I was like comparing George Floyd to someone like, I can't think of his name right now. But like the one kid that got pretty much shot by the police, and he was completely unarmed. Like, that's a false equivalence. Well, I was going to say that was a false equivalency. But the fact of the matter is, you guys aren't angry enough about that shit happening to begin with. So yeah. the difference that separates us from them, I guess, in that case, is that we get angry about it. You guys don't do anything about it.
Yeah. And I think part of that, too, is like like we were talking about with language and wording, is that I think white people, because they grow up with privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the thing with white people is that unless you're told about your privilege, unless you see your privilege or you're confronted with your privilege, there are some white people that just don't get it. They just don't understand that they have privilege because right. They're white. And I think because, you know, when you grow up in a community that is mostly a white colored community because of things like gentrification, mm-hmm. You don't understand your privilege as much as people from outside of that community do. And so when a cop does something like take someone down and they shoot someone, I think it's more easy for white communities to dismiss that as they were doing their job and this person must have done something to, you know, to make them feel threatened. Mm-hmm. They must have done something, right? They had to have. They wouldn't have gotten shot by the officer if they hadn't have done something wrong. Because you can't fathom that the officer is actually doing the wrong, because they've never bothered you. They've always been nice to you. But I think, you know, Black communities and minority communities and Native American communities for centuries have seen what white people don't tend to see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of that is due to things, like I said, like gentrification.
I'm just going to say privileged white people. Because there's poor white people that just depends on the area that they live in, community.
Yeah. But even poor white people have some privilege.
Some.
You know. And I do agree that there's levels to that privilege, but the privilege is still there.
And speaking of, on a lighter note, Miss Privilege, you remember when we went to Yomacon, and we were literally sleeping in the hallway of the hotel together, right next to each other, and the lady walks past you, says, "Wake me up."
That is funny. You can't sleep here. That is actually a funny representation of privilege, I think, because you're right. Like, why did she only wake you up?
She didn't wake you up.
Why didn't she wake me up? So basically, we didn't have a hotel room, right? That's why
we were staying at my house.
Yeah, so we were staying at Crystal's house for Yomacon 1 year, and we decided to just stay there, I think, just overnight. And
we decided to rough it and stay until our panel started that Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. And so we found these chairs near the elevators. It was relatively empty around there. No one was around. And I chose one side and Crystal chose the other. And when we're talking of privilege, I'm white, Crystal's Black. And this, was it just an employee of the hotel?
I don't know if it was an employee or it was staff, but I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, yeah. We don't know who it was. But they went and they woke Crystal up, and I knew nothing about it until Crystal told me about it, because I didn't wake up. I didn't get woken up at all. The only time I got woken up was when someone who was working the con from my theater department came to me and asked me if I had something that they needed, and I said no, and they're like, okay, go back to sleep. And that is a good representation of privilege right there. Because, like, why would they wake you up and not me? Because of prejudice, right?
Right.
Because they have prejudice in their mind. They see, you know, a Black person and they think you're, I don't know, just trying to find a place to stay for the night. Maybe you're not supposed to be at the convention at all.
The rule is you're not supposed to sleep in the hallways, but funny how that rule doesn't apply to Liz.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
Even though we're sitting right across from each other.
True. And that is a lighter way to show that.
To get to me.
That's true. She had to walk right past me. And it's not like, too, let me put it this way. It's not like, too, I'm a small little teeny bird that can crumple up into like a little teeny ball on the chair there. I'm fucking obese. Like, you can see me. But it's true, though. I'm a big girl. You can fucking see me. Not only am I big because of I'm fat, but I'm big because I'm 6 foot fucking tall. My legs were probably spread out.
Yeah, they were.
And she or he, I don't know, was it she, had to walk around my feet. I'm positive. So, I mean, that is a lighter way of kind of showing privilege and representing that. And, you know, showing that people have these prejudices or biases in their mind of, you know, when they see someone of a different color, or different culture, or whatever, you know, of who that person is, you know. And that's another thing, too, is I think, you know, if you're an individual that thinks things like, oh, what's some good examples? Oh, all Asians are good at math. Or, all Indians from India are bad drivers.
That's a thing?
You know, yeah, that is a thing.
Stereotype about
that is a thing because in India, in some cities in India, the crowd, like, it's so crowded that you have to be able to drive, make split-second decisions while you're driving. Mm-hmm. Because some of the cities are so crowded that if you got to get your way in, you got to find your way into the next lane. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that is one of those biases that people would have in America, because some of our cities aren't as crowded, right?
Right.
And so people don't think of the background of why someone might drive the way they do. So, I don't know. What are some that you can think of?
What, stereotypes?
Yeah, stereotypes or biases that would be.
I heard that same thing about Chinese people, Chinese drivers.
Yeah. But. Or something I never understood that me and Crystal have talked about before, and I would see her and other Black friends of mine posting about, is that white people don't season their food.
Oh yeah, that. And that y'all like cheese a lot.
I mean, cheese is fucking delicious. But...
And then y'all can't eat hot sauce because apparently, well, other spices besides pepper is too spicy for you guys. Oh, I go on and on about like white people stereotypes. I know quite a bit of those.
And so that's like when you have these biases, it's really easy to group people together and say, oh, rather than say, oh, you know, this one person who happens to be Asian or happens to be Chinese, Japanese, whatever, you know, is really good at math. Instead of saying this person is good at math, you know, people amplify that and say, well, if you're Asian, you're obviously good at math, right?
Right.
Which, you know, the negative effects of that is it can put undue amounts of pressure on people. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, cause them other issues. It can cause people to have expectations and be let down by those expectations and then take it out on the person that they had those expectations for. You know, when you're talking about, you know, grouping people together of saying, you know, oh, they're, you know, they're a bad driver because they're from India or because they're from China or wherever, it could cause for some bias in traffic stops, right? It could cause for cops to have some bias in traffic stops. And we already know that cops profile. I mean, we know that. They profile Black Americans all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it can lead to profiling when you say things like that. So I think people also need to work on not just what they say and how it's said and understand what not to say is just as important as what to say, but also you need to check your own biases that are in your head. But yeah, so I mean, I don't know. Is there some language that you see that needs to be improved upon? I mean, we can talk about language all day and why it's important. Like, words is not just what people use to justify discrimination, to justify police brutality, to justify all these things that are happening to the Black community and various other communities in the United States and around the world. Words are what people use to bully people and to justify bullying people.
Right.
You know, words and language is what people use to justify, you know, justify our president, who's obviously a pretty horrible human being. I mean, because, you know, he wants to, rather than comfort the country in a time of great distress, and actually he's had a couple chances now this year already because of COVID-19 and because of the Black Lives Matter movement, to try to comfort the country, to try to bring us together, and he hasn't been able to.
Right, he hasn't been. Too busy hiding in his fucking bunker with his little baby gate up.
And Crystal, obviously, is
I have strong feelings
about, I mean, that. She's not the only one. I have very strong feelings too. I don't tweet at him though.
Oh, I do. I don't care. Freedom of speech, right? That's important.
That is important. That is very important. And the other thing too is like, when we're talking about freedom of speech, sometimes people use that to justify what they say and think that they can say anything.
Right.
Like, you know, oh, you know, I can say anything because I have freedom of speech. Well, no, there are consequences to things you say. Sometimes they can be good consequences. Consequences aren't always bad. Sometimes they can be good consequences to what you say. You know, if you like, if say, you know, you comfort someone who's in distress, you know, and then they say, oh, thank you. You know, I appreciate it. That's a good consequence to some things you say. And then there can be bad consequences to things you say. Like when you tell everybody when the looting starts, the shooting starts.
Yeah.
Which is something our president actually tweeted.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you have to say on language?
And okay, words? I'm gonna read this. I'm gonna actually say this, and I'm gonna ask you, what do you think he means? So basically, Minnesota Senator Paul Galeska said, where's the apologies for moms out in the suburbs who are scared to death? He's talking about the looters. But what do you think that sounds like to you as far as language is concerned?
I mean, that sounds to me like someone who's very disconnected from what's going on right now.
She said he has no idea.
Like, first of all, a lot of communities, when we're talking about suburbs were created from gentrification. So
yeah, they were.
Like, so to sit there and say, what about the suburb bumps? Well, they gentrified that area. And let's have a conversation about why those suburbs were created in the first place, rather than asking why they're afraid. Like, do you not think that some of the communities, like the Black communities and the minorities and things like that, that you pushed out of that suburb, were afraid when you were shoving them further and further away from, like, their places of work, and them asking, how am I going to get to work? How am I going to feed my kids? How am I going to get this, this, and this? But, you know.
Yeah. That's what I thought that for a second. That really made me raise my eyebrows. I was just like, what do you mean by suburban moms? You mean white moms? Is that what you mean?
That is majority true. Like, when you moms? When you're talking about suburban moms, that's what I think of. I mean, right. the basic, like, even me saying that I thought of gentrification means that I was thinking of him saying white moms, right?
Yeah, that's exactly the language that I thought he meant too.
You know,
even though there are some minority families, there's Asian families, white families, Black families, Native families that live in the suburbs, but considering that these aren't urban areas that were, yeah, like exactly like Liz said, they're gentrified areas where the white people went to, So they're majority white.
Yeah, yeah. Usually when you're talking about
white suburbs, and middle class,
that's generally what happened. And when we're talking about language, right, we're obviously making generalizations.
Yeah,
which is why we point out that yes, sometimes there are minority families and sometimes there are black families in those areas. But we should have a conversation of why suburbs were created in the first place.
Right.
You know? And gentrification is actually something that I think I talked to Crystal about a long time ago, and it's something that you had to learn about. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's an issue that I don't think gets enough attention these days.
Agreed.
And gentrification causes a whole host of other issues too.
Right.
I mean, you know, it causes issues like what used to happen with redlining, where basically banks and stuff like that would redline an entire neighborhood that was thought of as good, you know, for profits and things like that, and an entire neighborhood that was bad. And the areas that they redlined as being bad were predominantly black communities. And because of that, those black communities, when it came to their schools and, you know, various programs and things like that, they didn't get as many programs, extracurricular activities, or funding for their schools, or, you know, the ability to you know, even as far back as when, you know, redlining first started happening, it made it more difficult for black families to actually purchase property and build wealth that way. And there are black families and black communities and minority communities that still feel the effects of that today.
Right.
You know.
There are.
So I don't think we talk about gentrification enough, but.
No, we don't.
definitely
don't talk about it.
That's something we should definitely go more into in a future episode too, is gentrification. And redlining, because I think it's pretty related on that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know. Do you have anything else to say? I mean, it's pretty basic, you know, words have meaning. Watch what you say. I shouldn't have to tell you this. Crystal shouldn't have to tell you this.
We're all fucking adults here. We should know that whatever we say or whatever what comes out of our mouths is going to get a reaction that we may or we may not like.
Yeah.
This concept ain't hard, kids.
Yeah, and given sometimes you don't always know the reaction that people are going to have, and, you know, because you don't always know a person's history, what they've been through, what they've gone through, you may say a word and just think, oh, it's a normal word, and it triggers somebody. It triggers something, maybe related to abuse or PTSD from, you know, war or something like that. And you don't always know how someone's going to react. And if they react negatively to a word that you think's okay, just apologize. It's not say, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't know this hurt you, you know, and that comes into empathy. Like, you need to have empathy for other people, because sometimes you're going to say something and it's going to hurt them and you're not going to understand why, but you need to try to understand why.
Yeah. And there's an amazing amount of is an amazing lack of empathy in this country. Amazing. Sometimes it baffles me sometimes.
Yeah. And I think that, like, we've, like, in recent years, part of the reason, like, lacking empathy is part of what's led to this movement of don't worry what people say. No, we should worry, and we would worry about what we say and what others say. I mean, you don't want to come to the point where you're being obsessive about it, right? And, you know, some people with mental health, like, I have depression and anxiety, so sometimes it goes round and round and round in my head and I'm worrying for nothing, you know. Well, then it's up to me to learn how to control that and how to stop that roundabout thinking. Mm-hmm. What you say has meaning. It may not always be what you expect, because sometimes it's open for interpretation. And if it gets interpreted negatively, it's not that hard to sit there and empathize with someone and say you're sorry. And a lot of people don't want to do that either. They don't want to say they're sorry. Like, they don't want to apologize. Mm-hmm. A lot of people avoid apologizing. And, you know, and sometimes it's understandable. Like, if someone feels like they're constantly apologizing all the time to everybody, it can be understandable. But there are people that I feel like not apologizing is like a sign of someone who's not empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
To other people, like someone who it's a sign
of a prideful person. It's definitely a sign of a prideful person, because if you can't apologize for something, that means you can't admit to being wrong about something.
Yeah. So I mean, it's okay to admit you're wrong too. It's okay to be wrong. That's how we learn. It's how we grow, is knowing that we've done something wrong and trying to improve upon it and get better. So, and we need to let people get better too. If someone said something 2, 4, 5, 6 years ago, and they haven't said it since, and they've learned their lesson, let them have learned their lesson. Cool. You know, don't sit there and cancel them because they said something 10 years ago and they've recognized their mistakes and haven't said it since. I hate when that happens. But anyways, I think that pretty much just kind of sums up our conversation. This was just pretty much an impromptu topic based on things we had said in the last podcast. Before we end today, though, I want to give some updates. And I did a forward to our last episode where I gave some of these updates, but I want to put it here, too, is that all of the officers in relation to George Floyd have been arrested mm-hmm. and charged. The main officer who was on his neck has
Derek Chauvin.
Yep. His charges have been upgraded to second degree, which me and Crystal had weighed quite a bit in the last episode about what, you know, maybe there was some stuff they thought they couldn't charge him, like they couldn't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that kept them from going for second degree right away. But maybe there's more information that they found out in their investigation that has allowed them to increase that charge and, you know, think that they can prove beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
The only thing understanding that's probably keeping them from first degree right now is being able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it was premeditated.
Right.
We had talked about in the last episode how that can be difficult to prove premeditation, especially in this instance. And I had said that I feel like it was premeditated, because I feel like if you go, you know, into a situation like this and you're being, you know, brutal beyond reason, then to me, you know, you have to be premeditated in that. But that mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily mean that they can prove that.
Right.
So, you know, while we may think he deserves first degree, it may not
be... People, please stop signing petitions to get a raise to first degree.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want that.
Understand that they are charging him with what they think they can prove. And I would rather have them be able to prove second or third degree than nothing at all.
I'd rather have second than third degree.
Yeah, yeah.
True. 40 years as opposed to 20.
Yeah, and they're not dropping the third degree charge. They're charging him with second and third and manslaughter. They're trying to get him on something.
Jesus Christ. Okay, I didn't know that part.
So, you know, they are not just charging him with one. They're trying to get him on something. So if they don't get him on second degree, they're trying to guarantee they can get him on third degree. So from what I understood, from what I was reading, they are still charging him with third degree. So, you know, understand that. Another thing that I had updated on was that we had talked about the guy that was going around in the black coat and black umbrella and smashing windows, and people had said he was an undercover cop. Mm-hmm. Local law enforcement has denied that he was a cop, and said he's not a cop. We don't, you know, no one, you know, no one knows who he is and stuff like that, which I can understand, because I have reservations on whether I can believe that or not. But they don't think he's a cop, and in which case he was still a person that was trying to cause chaos, and he should still be, you know, mm-hmm. arrested, because he was a white guy obviously trying to just cause some shit to happen. Mm-hmm. And we saw, you know, protesters and stuff going up to him to try and stop him. So, whether or not he's a cop, he was still doing something wrong. So, I don't know. Any other updates you've heard of?
Well, you didn't say what the other three police officers are getting charged with.
Yeah, I was just happy they were getting charged. I didn't read what they were getting charged with.
They're getting charged for aiding and abetting.
Okay. All right. Second, I figure.
Yeah.
Figure it would be something like that. Yeah. And you know, one person, I think in the article I read, I know people keep on noting that one officer did try to say something. I think it was that officer that had just started and was being trained. And I've seen, you know, someone being like, what do you expect, you know, an officer in training to do? I expect you to stand up for what's right. Whether or not you think you're going to be trained, you know, punished by your training officer or not. You know what they were doing was wrong. And I do think he's probably the person that's most likely to feel guilty for what they've done. You know, who feels like that maybe he could have done more. But he still deserves punishment because he didn't shove that officer off. He didn't stop them from doing what they were doing. He didn't call in other officers to come and you tell them, you know, report higher up and say that something wrong was happening. Because if he had, I'm sure other people would have shown up. So, but who knows? Maybe if he had, there would have been more of an effort to cover it up and we might have not learned about it as soon as we did. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you never know because we don't know how corrupt these, you know, officers are. Is it just these officers or is it their entire precinct? So, but yeah, that is an update to kind of some of the stuff we talked about in the last episode. So know that all the officers involved are getting charged and hopefully they're all gonna get sentenced and found guilty and sentenced. Do you think it's gonna be difficult for them to find a jury that works?
It might be difficult.
I worry.
Because it only takes one person to say not guilty for you to hang a jury.
Yeah. Well, I worry, too, that they're going to try and push it out of the Minneapolis area. Because sometimes they do that when, you know, when something is really controversial, they'll push it out of the community or they'll try and get it moved out of the community in which it happened. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to see that happen because I think if they're going to get charged, they're going to get charged in Minneapolis. Yeah. They're going to get sentenced. They're going to get sentenced in Minneapolis and found guilty there. So I hope their lawyers don't try and do some bullshit like that. But anyways, you guys, I know we've talked about a couple serious subjects a couple weeks in a row. But I think it's important for us to talk about, you know, Black Lives Matter movement and the stuff related to it. And I felt talking about language is relatively calm and we didn't just talk about language either. I mean, we talked a little bit about gentrification and touched on a few different issues and, got to hear what Crystal said to the president of the United States
via Twitter. You know what I like to, asshole. Say it again.
She's saying all the things I want to say, but I'm too scared to post because I don't want to deal with his shit. Or any of his supporters shit. But, Crystal, what are you thinking about talking about next week? Do you know?
I don't know. Maybe. I kind of want to talk about killing stalker because I haven't talked about it in a while.
Oh. That comic.
Like, oh, no, not that.
Well, I've been reading a comic called Stalking.
Stalking.
Maybe we can talk about these weird comics that we read.
Okay, next podcast we're going to talk about killing stalking and stalking.
All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the information we have relayed to you today. And, you know, in our last episode, if you are protesting, you know, keep on fighting the good fight. Just be careful.
Stay safe.
Stay safe. If you are a medic who's out there in the protest, a protester medic, please be safe, because they are attacking medics for protesters. They are attacking, media, media people that are out there recording everything. So they don't give a shit what you're doing out there.
They don't.
So just, be careful, be safe. If you have, try and identify any friends or family that you may have living near the protest locations, so you can, if it gets bad, you can, you know where you're going. Identify a place where you can go and where you know you'll be safe.
Right.
So, aside from that, everybody, make sure to stay strong.
Stay sweet. Fuck 12.
Just kidding. Fuck Trump. Bye.